Roy Bookbinder is here.
Yes, we are.
If I may say, Roy has circulated around the world, up and down the East Coast and the West Coast, and he's been out to the Fur Peace Ranch a bunch of times. He runs the blues stage at Merlefest. Do you still do that?
Well, I host the greatest acoustic blues show on earth. I named it that.
Yeah.
You see, back in 71, I did a gig with Doc Watson at some college in Connecticut, and we hit it off, and it was one of Merle's first gigs on the road with Doc.
Oh, God, that's going back.
His name hardly got on the poster. I still got the poster. It's in my office. And my new wife's got a house in Florida, so that's where I live. And we just had our 20th anniversary.
Oh, congratulations.
Congratulations.
It's working out good. So Doc said when this, it was during my Nashville period, I was in I was in Nashville doing a lot of TV with Ralph Embury's Nashville Now show.
Yeah.
Long story how that happened. I was on tour with Bonnie Raitt. Long story there. But they started the festival for Merle Watson.
True.
And Jerry Douglas produced my first round of records. So I said, hey, what's
with... I did not know that.
Yeah, I said, what's with this Merle Fest thing? Is it like a benefit or what? He said, no, call him up. He said, you'll get the gig. So I got the gig. And after I did it for a couple of years, Doc said, I'm trying to get more finger-picking blues at the festivals. I used to hang out with John Hurt and Booker White and all these people. And they said, why don't you organize it? I said, well, yeah, I could try to do that for you. So I've been doing it for 23 years.
All right, man.
And we've had everybody from Honey Boy Edwards to Dave Van Ronk, and a lot of guys are dead now. And a lot of new talent. We got some great acoustic blues players coming up.
Look, can I ask you the new guys that you're talking about? Well, who catches your fancy?
Jontavious Willis, who Taj Mahal and Kevin Moe got him rolling big time, and he's a great guy, Afro American guy from Georgia, young man, just graduated college, and he can flat out do it. You know, he could play anything. Big Joe Williams, everybody plays the same six songs. Most white guys.
Yeah.
Everybody's doing the three Gary Davis songs and the two John Hammond songs and all the Robert Johnson songs. But this kid can stretch. And then I got another duo, an Afro-American duo called Piedmont Blues, and they're doing stuff like Geechee Wallace and some weird stuff. She's a great singer and guitar player. And then there's a...
You don't hear folks covering that that stuff that much because it's spooky.
Right. And then there's a younger guy, Todd Albright, who's on Third Man Records.
Sure.
And he came out, Paul Jeremiah was his unwilling mentor, but he learned.
Really?
Yeah. But Todd would set up gigs for him and hang out with him, and he learned how to do it. And he's on Third Man Records. He's going to the studio to make his second Third Man Records. And we had him at Merlefest a few times. He's happening. He's just great. He gets a lot of press because Third Man's got the key to that door, And there's even a rumor that Jack White and Third Man might put out the old Roy and Fats records. It was 73 and 76, Fats Kaplan. Fats Kaplan worked with Jack White's band for about 4 years. So there's an in there, and Todd's on Third Man. And
Jack White was just in town last week.
He was, actually. I remember that, but yes, he was.
I don't know what he does, but I ran into him in Tulsa. I was having lunch with a friend of mine at an outside cafe, and I was sitting there, and she looked up, and she said, oh, there's Jack White crossing the street. So I said, which one? She said, the one with the cap on. So I just stood up when he was walking by my table. I said, Roy Bookbinder. He said, oh, my God, oh, my God. He quick-handed his camera to his friend and said, take pictures. Nobody's going to believe this. He was going bananas.
God bless him, man. And then he said,
and Fats Kaplan's coming up tomorrow. He's not going to believe this because me and Fats worked together for 3 years, so he knew all about me.
All right.
So, it's a crazy... You can't make this shit up.
No, you can't.
Roy's got some stories is what the upshot is here.
And can play the music, too. How about you guys do us a tune?
Yeah.
Well, you go ahead and do it.
I'll do the old four-chord rag thing that used to be the... this one, I call this... I composed this one. It's on my album, The Good Book. That's another tune I composed.
Yeah, good for you.
It was my big album that was number three on the Americana charts for a brief moment in August of 2013. Guy Clark was number one, and Townes Van Zandt was number two, and I was number three, and I'm the last man standing. So this song is called It Could Have Been Worse. My new wife, see, we'd go out socializing. I'm not a big socializer unless there's a microphone and a spotlight.
Yeah, baby.
And she said, oh, did you have a good time at that party? I said, it could have been worse. She said, well, you're so negative, blankety blank. What's with that, you know? And then I wrote this song called It Could Have Been Worse. Got the most airplay of the whole album.
Roy Bookbinder on KD&K.
Well, my good gal left with another man. I won't be missing her raising sand. She ain't good looking and she don't dress fine. The girl can't cook and she's always lying. Well, it could have been worse, they say. Could have been worse, you know. Could have been worse, just wait. Yeah, it could have been worse, you'll see. Her mama don't like me and she told me so. In my business, sticks her nose. She'll pop in, doesn't have a clue, and she'll catch us doing the dippity-doo. Well, it could have been worse, they say. Could have been worse, you know. Could have been worse, just wait. Yeah, it could have been worse, you'll see. She likes her whiskey, likes her wine. She's smoking them reefers all the time. She gets so high she can't hardly stand, and she can't remember I'm her man. It could have been worse, they say. It could have been worse, you know. Could have been worse, just wait. Yeah, it could have been worse, you'll see. Hey, hey, Lord, Lord. Could have been worse, you know. That's right. Well, she's telling stories on all her friends. Who's doing who to what, where, and when. She can't keep her mouth shut, that's for sure. And if she hears some trash, she just wants some more. Well, it could have been worse, they say. Could have been worse, you know. Could have been worse, that's right. Could have been worse, that's all.
All right, Roy Bookbinder.
That's a good one.
We're right here in the studio. That was a really good one.
Yeah, Phoebe liked it.
Put her to sleep.
Is that Phoebe down there having a nice little nap on the floor? Yeah.
It's very soothing music. I'm doing a show tomorrow, I hear.
I'm going to tell you about it if it's okay.
Go for it. Yes. Yes. Great show coming up tomorrow.
Good thinking, Roy. We got Roy here on account of the fact that he is going to be performing right up at the Missouri Heights Schoolhouse at 8 p.m. tomorrow night. And if you want to get tickets, you can do that online, or you can just bring a boatload of money to the front door. I don't care. One or the other works for me, works for Roy. But it is at the Missouri Heights Schoolhouse, and you can get the directions there by going to my web site. And that's simply called, because I used to do house concerts. Now they're house concerts, but it's somebody else's house. It's at www.houseofmustard.com. Easy to remember. Write it down on your forearm, or wherever you want to write it down in indelible marker. www.houseofmustard.com. All the driving directions are there. Place to buy tickets is there, and some lovely stories about Roy Bookbinder. And he doesn't mind telling you a few stories when he plays for you tomorrow night, 8 p.m.
All right. We'll see you there. Boy, that's going to be a great show. And what a great venue.
It is.
It's a unique venue for a concert.
It's over 100 years old, mm-hmm. and it is just this wooden box, and it's uniquely tuned, as I found out, to the acoustic guitar. You can stand up there. I found this out when a little band was playing up there with a very great mandolin player by the name of Dominic Leslie. And he was playing in there. We were trying to sound check, and the acoustic guitar was louder than the whole band.
Wow.
It just resonated right in that range. It was quite wonderful. It's a beautiful, like a sounding box for acoustic music. Missouri Heights Schoolhouse.
All right, so Roy, let's go back in time. How'd you get started in all this? What made you say, I want to do music. I want to pick up a guitar and make this my life.
I joined the Navy after high school. to avoid going to Vietnam, I figured they're not going to send an aircraft carrier to Vietnam. They ended up doing that, but I actually spent 3 years on the aircraft carrier terrorizing Italian villages, which I apologize for every time I go to Italy, but nobody understands me, but I've been sleeping better. And a kid on the ship had a guitar. He was from Oklahoma City, and he was teaching me some chords, and then we bought guitars in Italy, and we were strumming up storm there. And I had another friend on the ship, 5,000 of us on the ship then.
Good God.
Yeah. And I had three friends. I never piled up easy, you know. And one guy
find was, that hard to believe.
One guy was from Texas, and he had his electronic device that could actually play records with batteries, battery operated phonograph in his locker. So I got, and he had these John Lee Hooker records, which I was grooving on. Now, and when I was 14 and 15, I saw Ray Charles and Little Richard and people like that at the Apollo Theater, 13, 14, 15, growing up in New York. But I didn't know about this old-timey music. So I got turned on to that. And the third friend, Joe, was from Brooklyn. He was getting out of the Navy 6 months after I got on the ship, and he was going to be a beatnik. So he was reading all these Ferlinghetti books and Jack Kerouac shit and stuff like that. And he was going to grow a beard and what have you, you know, and move back to Brooklyn. So when he got out, he was a pal.
Good thing to aspire to.
Yeah, so he got out. When he left the ship, he gave me all his cool books. So I was reading all his cool books and strumming the guitar and listening to John Lee Hooker records. And I thought to myself at 20 years old, sailing around the Mediterranean, I might be able to put this together into some kind of life. And here I am.
Yeah, and you got your, is it true, you got your first guitar in Italy?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. How did you just wander around the city and say?
Oh, no, there was an Air Force base that had
it. Oh, it was actually in the Air Force base.
Yeah, they had it at the PX, whatever they call it. Okay. It was an Echo Archtop. And we both bought the matching guitars. We were thinking of like being the Everly Brothers.
Yeah.
But it didn't work out. But here I am, you know.
Yeah. Do you still have that guitar?
No.
Nah.
but then, you know, then I got out of the Navy and I tried to go to college for the second time. Didn't work out. But I was playing hootenannies in the village there. And actually, at that point, I was living back in the orphanage in the Bronx. I love to say that. I got a job at the child care center. A live-in job, so I had room and board.
In the orphanage. Oh, so you could sort of call yourself an orphan?
No, I was living in the orphanage. Yeah. I like saying that. It gets people's attention.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was a great job. You know, in the 60s, we all wanted to save the earth, so I did my bit there. And I was playing hootenannies on Tuesday nights at the Gaslight Cafe. David Ronk was the host, and I heard him play this lick on the guitar at somebody's house, and I said, oh my God, I have to do that. So I was doing that, and Dave Enrock was hosting the Hootenannies. I met him in Providence. He was playing at Brown University. I was going to Rhode Island Junior College, $50 a semester. Good deal that was.
Those were the days.
Yes. Yeah.
So I said to Dave, I went backstage, I said, oh God, you changed my life. The music's incredible. I never heard anything like you in my life. He said, what do you do? I said, well, I'm going to school on a GI Bill, but I'm going to be a blues guy. He said, well, good luck. And 3 years later, I'm at the Gaslight Cafe playing the Hootenanny. He's the host, but he's never in there. He's upstairs at the Kettle of Fish drinking Irish whiskey. He comes down to do the last set, draws the people in. But he walks in. I was doing the last set for an amateur. He comes down. He heard my three songs. So I'm in the dressing room, which is about the size of this studio. The whole club was about the size of the studio.
I have been there.
Yeah. So I'm back there, and Dave Van Rock walks in. And I look at him. He looks at me. I said, do you remember me? He said, I do, and you did. And then he took me home, and we drank Irish whiskey and listened to old records and talked shit for hours. It was great.
Dave Van Rock.
And then Dave Van Rock and Ramble Jack Elliott, they were my two folk singer heroes. Mm-hmm. I didn't care for anything else, really, you know, because they made it their own. They played traditional music, but they weren't copycats.
Sure, yeah.
And I like them better than the old guys, but they both had hung out with Gary Davis, so I ended up at Gary Davis's house for a $5 lesson. I dropped out of school, left the orphanage, and went on the road with the Reverend for about a year.
Really?
He tried to show me stuff. I he said, "What can you play on a guitar?" I played him Candyman Blues. He said, "Good God Almighty, you sound like Reverend Davis, you sound like Dave Van Ronk." And he didn't like the way Dave Van Ronk monkeyed with the timing and everything.
Oh,
so he spent 3 hours trying to unlearn my best song. And then he got me all screwed up, ended up neither of them liked the way I played it. But now I play it my way.
Yeah, so, I mean, so... since there was a bit of a conflict there, do you think you did get learned something or did pick up something or inspired by Reverend Gary Davis?
Oh, a lot. Yeah. Because there's a little Gary Davis in everything I do.
Sure.
And I do some of his tunes. But he was very big on big runs and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I was into his chords. Beautiful, big, churchy chords. Like I wrote a song called The Good Book. Which wouldn't have happened without Reverend Davis. It's all his chords, and it's kind of a Christian song or a spiritual song, we'll say.
Okay.
I opened up a show for the Robert Johnson's grandson's got a gospel choir, and they did a show at the Fur Peace Ranch with Rory Block, who's helping them out. And I opened up the show, and I did all I never write a set list, but I went out there and I started with The Good Book, and from there I talked about Gary and me singing in church with him and stuff. And all of a sudden it was, I was really possessed by the whole thing. I walked up the stage and all these people from Mississippi are backstage, like there's 20 of them in the choir, and all the women were saying, "Man, you had the spirit out there." And the guy said, "Yeah, you did." They high-fiving me. They said, "You really had the spirit." I said, "Yeah, I guess I did." And I got all teary-eyed. It was great. You know, you can't make it up. But this song is one of the greatest things I ever wrote. And I was inspired by Merle Haggard's manager, Tex Whitson, who's been in my corner for almost 30 years, which is ironic. That's a long story, too. I mean, it goes on and on. I wrote Merle Haggard did this album, I Love Dixie Blues, and he did three covers of Emmett Miller songs.
Oh, yeah.
Really? So I wrote Haggard, and I told the first wife, "I'm writing Merle Haggard a fan letter." We were living in the bus. I lived in the bus when I left Greenwich Village for 16, 17 years. It goes on and on. So I wrote Merle Haggard a letter. I read at the barbershop in Polk City, Florida, that they were into bass fishing at Lake Shasta, and I just caught a 10-pound bass in the lake, Polk City Lake or whatever. So I said, and closed the picture. I said, "You know, I'm on the road playing, I live in the bus, blah, blah, blah." And about 6 months later, my mail caught up with me, and the stationer, he said, "Hag Inc." I almost had a heart attack. It was from his manager. He said, "You got her attention with a picture of the fish. Send us a couple of your albums." And
It was a fish that did it.
Yeah. Send us a couple of your albums, and we'll see what we can do for you. And it's been a crazy ride. I don't know what he's done, but it's working.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right. How about another song?
Yeah, I'll do this, The Good Book.
The Good Book. Roy Bookbinder on The Blues Kitchen and KD&K.
My mama told me, my papa told me too, the good book's got the answers, it will tell you what to do. The good book's got the answers, you just wait and see. Good book's got the answers there just for you and me. Learn to sing and dance, you better work and play real hard, and watch your step along the way on your journey to the stars. Don't you be a cheater, don't be telling lies, straight and narrow path you're on will lead you to the prize. Be good to the children, the old and feeble too. Don't be doing to others what you don't want done to you. Mind your own business, keep singing this happy song. A soldier in God's army always knows what's right from wrong. Thank you. don't be wanting what's not yours. Give thanks. You got a lot. You ain't never going to miss what you don't have or get from them that's got. Fussing and a fighting is not the righteous way. You just best be quiet if you've got nothing good to say. That's a short version of that.
Good tune.
The good tune.
All right, the good book. Yeah. Singing it.
Yeah. Mother Davis, as we used to call his wife in the old days, she would have really liked that. Reverend Davis never got too excited about anybody. But it was a fun ride.
Nice. One thing I was going to ask you, just looking at your background, you were involved with the Fur Peace Ranch in Ohio. Are you still teaching there Jorma Kalkinen?
You know, the irony is when I was starting out in the late 60s, Hot Tuna was happening. And I knew nothing about all that stuff. I never heard the Jefferson Airplane to this day. I have no desire to. But the drunkest guy in my audience, I'd play the Hesitation Blues, he'd yell out, "Jorma," and I didn't know what the blankety blanket was. And then when I found out, I was not that thrilled about
it. Thought it was some foreign language or something.
I was not that thrilled about it. So I was down on all that kind of stuff. What are these rock and rollers coming into my little turf here?
Yeah.
They're soiling the yard, you know?
Yeah.
And lo and behold, many years later, I called up the town crier, a place I used to play. I said, "I got to have a gig the second weekend of July." And he said, "Oh, my God, I got Jorma Kalkinen coming in." Blankety blank. And I was a little pissed off about that. He said, "Why don't you just open up for him on the Saturday?" I said, "Oh, God." I said, "Yeah, I'll do it. By God, I'll do it." So I booked the date. And Jorma was known for drawing a pretty rough crowd, but it was a refined place, the town crier. It was a snazzy supper club, which I don't play anymore. I'm not going to go into the reasons for that, but keeping the personal things out of it. But so I get there, and they do the sound check, and Jorma's not there. I get up there. There's a lot of bikers out there, you know, in the parking lot. But they're all they're on good behavior. So I get up there, and I do my first song in a lot of them stopped eating. They were all like, I mesmerized them for 50 minutes. I was killing them. Absolutely killing them, because they understood the music, because they, Jorma sort of plays
set
like,
them up for it.
So, I mean, were they still expecting Jorma, and then you showed
Jorma,
up?
Oh, no, I was the opening. I was.
So you were supposed to, you were going to open.
Yeah, I was the special guest act, but they didn't know who I was.
Just put that anyway.
Yeah. So I go into the dressing room when I'm done, the crowd's going wild. And Jorma's sitting there with Vanessa, his wife, and her sister, and his road manager. He's doing a solo gig. He's got five people sitting on the couch. And I walk in there, and he stands up and walks over to me and puts his hand out and says, "You're Roy Bookbinder." I said, "Yeah." He said, "I have never seen anybody do to my audience what you just did." He said, I said, "Oh, thanks." He said, "I'm Jorma Kalkinen." I said, "Yeah, I figured." He says, "I have all your records." I said, "Yeah, really? I mean, I was there ready to duke it out, you know?" He said, "And that stuff you do on Ralph Emery's country show, I'm crazy about that. Mm-hmm. It's my favorite show. I mean, what you do in the country market with your bluesy band, I just love that stuff." I said, "Oh, yeah, really?" He says, "Yeah, we ought to get to know each other better." I'm thinking like, oh, geez. I said, "Where do you live?" He said, "Woodstock." We weren't far from Woodstock. I said, "What are you doing tomorrow?" And he looked at his wife, and she gave him a okay. He said, "Lunch at noon." I said, "I'll be there." And I've been there ever since.
Nice.
I mean, the next thing I know, I got a call from the William Morris Agency, a message. I thought it was being signed, but I called back. They said, "Jorma wants you to open up at the Lone Star." And that was a horrible gig, because it was Electric Hot Tuna.
Yeah.
And for 40 minutes, they were beating me up, yelling Jorma. And I'm playing. And I go up to the dressing room, and Jorma's up there with his gang, and he says, "Oh, they loved you." I said, "Yeah, right. If this is love, I don't need this." Then he said, "We'll call you out to jam with us at the end, and they'll go berserk." I said, "I don't jam." I said, "I know how to play 50 songs, and that's it. I don't play well with others." He says, well, we'll do two of your songs. I said, okay. So when he called me out, the place went berserk. But I never wanted to tour with them because they can be ornery, that kind of crowd. I like a listening audience. I mean, I'm an art center.
Well, it sounds like you kind of had an ornery crowd, but you had them enraptured at that one time. So maybe...
But that wasn't the Lone Star.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So this
Lone Star's got New York City's got a reputation for that. But anyway, when Yorma... we hit it off because I wasn't a fan.
Really?
He got me a couple of gigs. And I got another call from William Morris. I did a few gigs with him. And we're in the dressing room. He's playing a white guitar and a black guitar, a 12 string and a 6 string. And we're down in the dressing room in between shows. And he said, what do you think of the tone of my 12 string? I said, I think it really sucked. He said, what? I said, why are you playing these Alvarez guitars? He said, well, they give them to me.
Yeah, there you go.
I said, well, what the? That's ridiculous. You're a big star. I say, hey, call Robbie Johnson Gibson and he'll take care of you for the rest of your life. And he did.
Nice.
Until he didn't. And then he went with Martin. But I think Yorma liked it that I was a free spirit and I wasn't kissing anybody's ass. Because it's when I'm still. Slogging along.
Mm hmm.
But I never intended to hit the big time playing this kind of music. I never made any compromises. I mean, some big people, you know, I used to play in Houston and Lyle Lovett used to open up for me.
Lyle Lovett opened for you?
Yeah, I'd do anything. I'm waiting for him to call back.
Yeah.
I would love to tour with him.
Or maybe you could call him and say, hey, Lyle, I need an opening act.
I wasn't that nice to him. I wasn't impressed.
It's the least you can do, Lyle. Come on.
Yeah, come on, Lyle. You're not busy. Yeah. I mean, what do you got going on?
The only one that ever took me on tour was Bonnie. I played with Bonnie 1 year.
Bonnie Raitt?
Is there another Bonnie?
I don't know. There might be. Just checking.
Yeah. No, there's Merle Haggard's Bonnie Owens. But she's dead. I toured with Bonnie from Florida to Maine. We played the Grand Ole Opry, and that helped lead to my country period. Her manager Dick Waterman set that up. That was good. We played
Ralph Emery liked to have Roy on the couch. Roy was good counterpoint Ralph would do his show early in the morning. Am I right?
It was live at night.
Oh, okay. Those ones. But they were early.
He had an early morning show before he went national with the Nashville Network. But I do my song and come over to the couch. And he had all the country starlets and people pushing their records. And they're told what to say by their managers. Yeah. And I was a loose cannon. The one time I did He's in the Jailhouse Now. And I come shuffling over there. And I had my, I was what they call the Nashville Goober Act. I had suspenders and baggy pants and a big mustache, and John Hartford gave me a derby. I was a trip there, but I had a mustache that took up the whole TV screen in those days. Yeah. So I come over to the couch and Charlie Pride's the other guest, and he's trying to introduce me to Charlie Pride, and he's hysterical laughing. So he finally pulls himself together. I said, Charlie, what's so funny? He says, what's so funny? You're up there doing, sounding like all my uncles in Mississippi, and I'm doing Hank Williams songs. And Charlie was really nice to me, and I hung out with Chet Atkins on the. Chet Atkins told me on the couch, he said, if I was a younger man, I'd love to produce you. That's chapter 11 in my book I'm writing, Near Brushes with Stardom.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
But it's you can't make it up.
No, you can't.
He's great.
Well, Roy, we're going to have to wrap this up pretty soon, but would love to hear one more song from you, if we may.
Yeah. Okay, this is, let me think.
Can I make a request?
Yeah.
Your biscuits are big enough for me.
I don't do that one anymore.
Oh, you don't?
No.
Well, never mind that.
Well, yeah. Nice try.
I'll let you give it. I'll let you ask, though. Thanks.
No Bo Carter? Any Bo Carter?
No, not really.
Okay.
Okay, I'll do this one here. This one here is called The Preacher Picked the Guitar. That's why I wrote this for Gary Davis after he died. He died May 5th, 1972. And I was doing a show. And,
sad day.
Yeah. And Yorma says, that's a great song. Who wrote that? I said, which one? He said, The Preacher. I said, me. So he's recorded it twice.
Really?
And every time he plays it, I always take out his set list. He plays it a lot. He recorded another one. And then he just recorded one Tommy Emmanuel did a couple of duet albums. One of them's not issued yet, and I'm on the second one. Mm-hmm. He did my song Full Go Round. That's really a better song. I think I'll do that one.
Okay.
In D. The Fool Go Round. That's on Yorma's album, Stars in My Crown. The other night I was playing in L.A. at Boulevard Music, and a guy comes up to me and says, I love the way you're doing Yorma's song, Fool Go Round.
Yorma's song?
I said, I'm getting the check. You know, people download it. They don't read. They don't have an album.
They don't
to
look
read.
At the part of written
even if
by,
they get the CD.
No, we used to get these things called records. You're a young fellow. You may not remember.
Vaguely. They're back in the past there someplace. Yeah. I don't know. I'm looking at some on the wall here.
Even if you get a CD, you can't read who did what.
No, it's tiny little type. Yeah. But we used to read the labels on these records, even back to the old 78s, and used to study who was the. Who is the composer? Sometimes they even had the arranger on there.
Yeah. This one's dedicated to all the guys and gals that used to be here playing old-timey music. Put them in the ground 6 feet down till you hear that coffin sound. You can weep and you can moan, but that old boy ain't never coming home. Another man done a full go round. You know, we can tell our tales, we can laugh and joke, and we could ponder all day about the words he spoke. You can't run, you can't hide when death come creeping up by your side. Another man done a full go round. No more fussing about this or worrying about that. Taking out the dog or letting in the cat. Eat your biscuits and gravy, mama. You can smoke and drink, cause it ain't gonna matter when nobody thinks another man done a full go round. Winter, summer, spring or fall, you gotta go when the good Lord calls. Made us laugh until we cried, only wish I had a chance to say goodbye. Another man done a full go round.
Roy Bookbinder.
That's the full go round.
Yeah, Roy Bookbinder here in the Blues Kitchen live in our studio at KDNK. Roy, thank you so much for coming in. Really enjoyed having
you
here.
You know, none of us independent artists would even had a career start without community and public radio, so we thank you.
And you're a kind of, you know, you're part of ours too, because we got your material that we play that you don't hear on commercial stations too much.
We have a great station back home in Tampa, WMNF, has been very supportive for the last 35 years. Great station. They got their reggae hour and their folk hour. But every time anytime I want to be on the radio, I just call them up and go. It's nice.
Just stop in there, and I'm sure
they
play.
And KDNK is that kind of station. You can drop in, and I'm so pleased that you made a little time on your show.
I was.
We gobbled up all your time.
And you know, it ain't just the fact that we do in fact have a show tomorrow night up at the Missouri Heights Schoolhouse with Roy playing, but that the cultural heartbeat. You know, that gets a little bit of a soul injection from guys who are traveling the world, like Roy Bookbinder can come in here and put a little bit of iron in the bloodstream. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, indeed.
It's a beautiful thing.
Right. Yeah,
there is,
it is.
There is blood and bones in this still.
Yeah, baby.
It is.
Yeah, people ask me sometimes, hey, you're still on the road after 50-plus years. How do you do it? I said, well, you know, it's not that you really chose it chooses you.
Yeah,
many are called, few are chosen, but
And probably, I assume you're not living in the van anymore, so...
I'm living in the van 6 months a year.
Oh, are you? Well, yeah.
I spent 6 months at the wife's house down in St. Pete.
God bless her.
And the rest of the time you're in the van traveling?
Pretty much.
Wow.
I mean, sometimes if I get a dead period, I'll fly home once in a while. But the wife goes out on the road. She just did 2.5 months, and she's home for a while. She'll meet me in the Northeast in October.
I suggest you keep her.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
As Betty Guy says, it's cheaper to keep her.
Exactly.
Yeah. Ray Charles, and other reasons, too,
yeah,
of course.
Ray Charles had that in a song years ago. I saw Ray Charles when I was a kid at 14 at the Apollo Theater. The only white guy, two, three white guys in the audience.
Yeah, those are the days.
But those were the days.
Those
but
in
79,
days.
I got a chance to open up a show for Ray Charles at the Tampa Theater, two shows.
Wow.
And I rented a top hat and tails because I knew they were tuxedo people.
Yeah, nice.
And it was incredible.
Where do you rent a top hat? I can't get that in this town.
Well, you can in Tampa.
All right.
You got to mail order it around here, I guess.
It must have a fly shop in Tampa.
Yeah.
It's got that
stuff. It was great. Ray Charles, they took me to his dressing room, and he wanted to meet me. So he shakes my hand, and he says, "Oh, man, you're still in your tux?" I said, "I'm here by myself. I put it on this morning. I'm not taking it off till I go to sleep." He laughed. I said, "You know, I saw you do 5 shows at the Apollo for $2.57. He said, "We got a union now, Brother Roy."
Yeah.
He was really sweet to me, and he was little. I couldn't believe it. He was a lot shorter than me.
But how about that?
I sat in the audience crying. It was incredible.
Because
I'd seen him 11 times or 12 times.
Love that. My mama turned me on to Ray Charles. God bless her.
Yeah, Ray was the king. Yeah.
Okay.
And it was great. I mean, the audience was a little rough on me. The late show was all brothers and sisters, you know?
Sure.
And I stopped the first song. I said, "Hey," I said, "you got to give me a break. Brother Ray dared me to come out here and try to entertain you people." And they started laughing. And then I had them.
Kind of broke the ice a little
bit. At the end,
bit.
I walked off the stage. I was playing "Oh Glory, How Happy I Am," told them I learned from a blind preacher. And they were singing along. I walked off the stage with tears coming down my eyes.
That's great.
My goodness.
Ray Letts, we're getting ready to go on. One of them sticks a head out of the dressing room and says, "There he is." And the other one sticks a head out and says, "That was the cutest little show." And I had tears coming down my face. I said, "Was it?" "Oh, yeah, that was cute. That was cute."
Very nice.
Well, thanks for having me.
Roy, thank you so much for coming
right,
in
Chief
and
Mike.
Entertaining us. And once again, Roy Bookbinder will be at the Missouri Schoolhouse tomorrow night at 8 o'clock.
Ooh.
More information and tickets and all that good stuff, go to houseofmustard.com. I hope I said that right.
Yeah,
got
you
that
did.
On there. Okay, good
it's
deal.
It's one word.
One word, houseofmustard.com. And check out Roy there at the schoolhouse. It's now, my goodness. Yes.
I'll be at Swallow Hill on Saturday in Denver.
Okay, so hey,
friends.
If you're going to be on the Front Range, if you listen to a streaming, Swallow Hill on Thursday.
Saturday.
Set Roy Bookbinder at Swallow Hill. Great venue, too,
yeah,
by
I've
the way.
There
I've been there
times.
Many times. Yeah. I've seen many shows. So,
yes,
yeah.
Sure, Bob.
So thanks for coming here. Thanks for coming to Colorado, Roy.
Yeah. And if you're going to be in St. Louis.
Okay, we'll just read your whole tour.
Yeah. RoyBookbinder.com.
All right. Okay, wow. So great having Roy here on the show. And take care, Roy.
Keep all his music alive.
Yeah, that's what we're doing. We're keeping the music alive here in public radio, KDNK, and here on the Blues Kitchen, where we had Roy Bookbinder keeping us entertained with a very special show. So, wow. So, okay, I got to get back here. I got to do a little catching up here. Let's see. Let me think. What do I want to do?